It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the show. Sean and I here with you. You can call in if you'd like. Also tweet at us, at Sean A. Mapes, at Delvey2 is how you talk to us if you don't want to call in, which is understandable. I don't like getting on the phone very much either, with people I know, let alone calling into a radio station. But those are the options for you. If you want to watch the show, ESPN Houston is how you find us on YouTube. Go to YouTube, type in ESPN Houston. Or you can type it in on Google. There are multiple ways to find the YouTube stream. Go there, subscribe, like, all the things that a YouTube influencer would tell you to do, I'm going to tell you to do right now. I don't have the influencer hands where I have a product and I put it up to the camera to make sure it focuses. I don't do that. Sean can see I'm doing it on, you can see me doing it on YouTube right now. I don't do that often, but like I have a can of, let's just say, an unnamed drink.
No free ads.
Yeah, no free ads. I would do this if you can see it on YouTube. I don't know if it'll focus for you. It should. But, I mean, we are YouTube influencers now, particularly Lance Erline. So if you want to help out the cause, go to ESPN Houston and like and subscribe and do all the things that you do when you're on YouTube. Comment if you so choose as well. I mentioned before we went to break, I wanted to get into Johnny Boycott. If you missed it, Johnny Manziel has thoughts on how the Heisman Trophy should deal with Reggie Bush. And he is in full support of one Reggie Bush. If you don't know the story, Reggie Bush had to return his Heisman his 2005 Heisman after an NCAA investigation found that Bush received impermissible extra benefits. Now, Johnny has leaned on, well, the last two Heisman winners have garnered, at least have been paid through NIL, much more than Reggie Bush ever got, so they should give him his trophy back. Of course, the rules are different, so I'm not sure drawing that correlation means a lot. Now, I'm in favor of Reggie Bush getting his Heisman. We all know he was a Heisman winner from that year. Who cares that he took impermissible benefits? I don't even know why the Heisman Trophy is beholden to NCAA rules. I'm not sure. Aren't they an independent body? Why do they have to? Maybe not bend, but because the NCAA ruled Reggie Bush to have received benefits, they can't give him his Heisman? Okay. But Johnny doesn't like it. Johnny Manziel said, after careful thought and consideration, I will be humbly removing myself from the Heisman Trophy ceremony until Reggie Bush gets his trophy back. He posted this on X or Twitter. Doesn't sit right with my morals and values that he can't be on the stage with us every year. Reggie is the Heisman Trophy. Do the right thing. The NCAA, the ball is in your court. Now, Sean, can you think of a person, the Heisman Trophy, whatever they're called, whatever the official term for their foundation or trust is called, would have less concerns about showing up or not showing up than Johnny as a former Heisman winner? I mean, I can think of one. He's an accused murderer. But other than him, who would the Heisman Trophy care less about not showing up?
Yeah, I imagine the first year that they had him come back, they're like, are we sure he's going to show up? Are we sure he's going to show up and be a cooperative member of this ceremony? Or is he going to come in a Scooby-Doo costume? I don't know. But, yeah, it is funny thinking of a room full of, I'm just going to guess, stuffy old white guys that run the Heisman Trophy ceremony. I can't imagine that's like a group of young people,
yeah,
from diverse backgrounds.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the Heisman Trust. That's their name. Yeah. Oh, please don't threaten us with a good time, Johnny. You don't want to show up anymore?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
We'll just have Sam Bradford stand in your place.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier for us.
Yeah, and of course, because of when the Heisman is, not a lot of current NFL players are going to show up because, they have actual jobs to do, and it's a Saturday before a game. But so they have to depend on guys out of the league, and Johnny, he would still be in the middle of an NFL career if he didn't care about Coke as much as he does, well, as he did, at least, as he did.
It feels better at, you know.
Well, that too.
Better at football.
But even, but yes, that.
Feels so good at football that he didn't have to worry about doing coke.
Yes. Johnny Manziel never really wanted to be an NFL prospect if you watch that documentary. It wasn't, he loved college football and what it brought to him, but the NFL wasn't, he wasn't that interested, particularly in Cleveland.
It is especially funny given the documentary that just came out about Johnny Manziel where, I don't know, 25 minutes of it were dedicated, or maybe even more, dedicated to here's how much money we're making and how we got away with it.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can still stand up there on the stage, well, until you know, he took made the hard choice
to not show up to New York for a boycott.
But that he was like on the record being like, man, it was crazy how much money we're making.
You make a point.
Reggie Bush still can't.
Yeah, you make a point. He admitted to skirting the rules and finding a way to make money despite the NCAA rules. And the Heisman was like, come on in. We don't care. Yeah, right. Because and
do the money sign.
Yeah, do all of the things that would suggest we would ban you if the NCAA really stepped in. And the Heisman Trust is what they're called, as I was trying to figure that out earlier.
Yeah, I forgot if it was committee or.
Yeah, whatever. Same. They said they would return Bush's trophy if the NCAA reinstated him, and they have not. Once again, why do you have to listen to the NCAA? You're an independent body. Okay. I don't understand that
okay.
at all.
So everyone listening, just know that there's probably going to be about five more years until Reggie Bush gets to be part of the ceremony, because that's probably the life expectancy I'd put on the NCAA. He's still being a thing.
So when they no longer exist anymore,
then he'll be back.
All right. Great.
Handing the trophy to, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes III or whoever's going to be winning the Heisman.
There's some eighth grader that's taunting Cam Newton right now, who's going to win the Heisman
whose
trophy.
His coach just got beat up by
Cam Newton who's going to win the Heisman.
Top sport performance.
Yeah, he's going to look at Cam and say, You're a free agent, like that kid did, and maybe that kid's going to win a Heisman in a couple years.
You're retired now.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah,
I'm rich.
I'm 40.
He was like, I'm rich. Remember that video? I'm rich. That's all Cam said. The kid responded with, "You're a free agent." I was like, well, Cam does have a point. He did get millions and millions of dollars, and now he's a free agent. But I think he won in life. If we're talking about Cam. That's Johnny Manziel, the least amount of stroke of all the former Heisman winners outside of OJ, as far as this boycott thing does.
I would love for them to power it. Maybe when they hit like the next milestone of Heisman Trophy winner, I don't know. Are they close to 100?
I don't think they've been around that long. A lot of the guys are old enough. The guys who are making the decision are probably nearing 100, but I don't think they've had that many Heisman Trophy winners.
But whenever we get to the next like benchmark, like the NBA 75, where they come out with the list, I would love for them to rank the Heisman winners. That'd be just such great content. Someone would take it personally. Troy Smith would be like, "What'd I do?"
Sure, number one would be one of the four horsemen from Notre Dame or whatever.
There'd be a lot of pre World War II.
Roger Staubach, although he's not pre-World War II, but he would probably be at one of the top of their list because, you know, he played at Navy. Yeah. He's a legend. Troy Smith has to be like, if they did a golden 75, Troy Smith is like 72, right?
Yeah. That I want to know who's the most upset by how low they are.
Why does the Heisman Trust do that? Because that would actually make people care.
Yeah, it's literally just a free people are talking about us now.
Yeah.
That you can pull at any time.
Rank your – and you could put some guy no one ever heard of, but like Beano Cook if he was still alive. Put him at one and then watch everyone go crazy because all his highlights are in black and white and they had a leather helmet on.
Yeah. Well, I guess Archie Griffin would be number one.
He won two, yeah.
Yeah.
You would have to give it to him. He won two. True.
Or do you treat him as separate winners? And it's like – well, Archie Griffin in 1975
was better than
1976.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know. His first year was better.
Yeah, Paul Hornung would be the guy they give it to probably. John David Crow out of A&M. Something. It would not be someone where like
– Mark Ingram, 69th.
Yeah. The running backs of the HD or color TV generation will be very low on the list. A running back from – could they rank OJ? Would they exclude OJ?
They should. If
they haven't taken his Heisman away.
if they're committed to the, you know, to the pursuit of knowledge,
they would have to rank them because they didn't take it away.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it.
It'd be a short entry, I bet.
They wouldn't be a lot written about OJ.
Ran for 2,000 yards.
And none like the bio, but he came from this. They wouldn't do a lot of the bio stuff.
From Oakland. Yeah.
No. It would be a lot of before USC, and it would end there. It wouldn't go, oh, he went on to be a great player. Nah, we're gonna end. We're not going to go past what he did at USC because then we have to get to all of what he did after USC. He was the Hurts guy. He was in those Naked Gun movies.
Yeah. He went on to pursue a career in broadcasting and acting.
What if they only talked about that?
And they just end it right at like 1993.
Yeah.
It's like the last.
Nothing else happened after that. In fact, I think we're right. They would mention the stuff that happened. It'd just be inexplicably, it would end at 93 and nothing else would be mentioned. I mean, he was with Bob Trumpy and Dick Enberg on NBC as their sideline reporter and scene.
Yeah, they make slideshows of like O.J. Simpson through the years.
And jumping over, ends
with him holding the NBC microphone.
Jumping over luggage in the airport, like those Hertz commercials. Probably a little bit before your time. I was a little kid when those were out. But if you want to see O.J. when he was not one of the most hated people in all of America, I guess, at least some people's eyes, some people still like O.J., go back to the mid early 90s and watch him in Hertz commercials and look at the difference. Now he's on Twitter talking about things OJ's still a little bit relevant. Every time he tweets, people are like, I can't believe this guy has a life. I can't believe I'm listening to OJ talk about this subject.
Talk about fantasy football.
Yeah, and everyone's like, the juice is loose again.
Man, Derrick Henry really, really let me down this week.
It is almost like I was a little kid when the trial happened. If you lived through that and now you watch OJ tweeting about fantasy football stuff and how Derrick Henry didn't come through for him, it's kind of mind-blowing and maybe numbing in some regards that this is life right now. It happens. People get away with things, and OJ certainly did, if you are to believe evidence and all that other stuff that goes into it. I can't see that name because it's not highlighted, or at least highlighted in gray, so I can't see the name. Dylan wants to talk about Shogun, a show that's, I guess, the TV, this show's show. When we talk about TV shows, we'll talk about Shogun on the other side of Dylan. And is that Channel View? I think our intern wrote Camel View.
That's all right. I think I don't know of a Camel View, Texas.
We'll find out.
I think it's Channel View.
Either way, we'll find out when we come back. Dylan, on the other side, you guys can call in and talk about really anything you want. You see where the show's going now. We're talking about OJ and where he would rank as far as Heisman winners are concerned. Probably be pretty high, if not for all that, you know, other stuff. I don't know how to wrap up not talking about OJ anymore. Dylan, we'll talk to you on the other side. Anyone else who wants to join in, please do call. We'll be back.
Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Sean did the research. 86 times the Heisman has been awarded. So we're about 15 years away, or 14 awardings away from 100. And when they do that, they should do a top 100 list. And we'll see where people rank. And Sean has come to the conclusion that Davey O'Brien would be very high on the Heisman top 100 list. I agree. I think we'd see a lot of old school guys who we've never seen play get a lot of run. And then the likes of, I was going to use Rashawn Salaam, but RIP to Rashawn Salaam. Eddie George would probably be relatively high, but the likes of Mark Ingram, now that we know it probably would happen at 100, he'd probably be in the 90s. Derrick Henry.
Yeah. Jason White.
86. Oh, Jason White. Oof. We're talking 94, 95. Danny Werfel, somewhat like Jason White. He'd probably get raised higher because those fun and gun Florida teams were kind of legendary. He'd probably – Chris Winkie.
Yeah.
90s. I think they'd knock him because of age.
I was thinking, like, how would they compare the numbers to, like, a Heisman-winning quarterback in – 1985 Joe Burrow versus Cam Newton.
Joe Burrow versus Ty Detmer.
Yeah.
Well, and Ty Detmer played in an advanced offense, but even still.
Joe Burrow also played probably, what, four more games?
Yeah, he didn't play. He played 15 games, so they won the title. We do have a couple calls. Dylan called in. Eric, I see. That's probably Eric Wong, considering the title. I mean, considering the subject matter. Generally, that's an Eric Wong type of call. We'll see. But Dylan, let's talk about Shogun. What's up, Dylan?
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Dell and Sean? I wanted to say congratulations on getting the Charlie Polello 4.0 slot. And I'm glad that the station has added culture to the lineup. I'm just going to go ahead and say that Shogun is the best show on television right now. I've been waiting for this thing to come out. What do you guys think? Bye.
Thanks, Dylan. I'm all in. It's, as I said, it's probably this show's TV show of the moment. Michael Carroll brought it to our attention last week. No, maybe it was not last week, obviously. A couple weeks ago, he brought it to our attention. It's something I had seen the previews for, but he told me and Sean that he was going to be looking forward to watching it, and I watched it. And beyond, Sean brought up a point I kind of agree with. I didn't mention it when he brought it up. The first 20 minutes as they're world building, you're kind of, okay, where are we going? But once you get past that point and we get into the action and the intrigue, it's lights out for me. Sean, did you watch the second episode, or were you too busy with other things this weekend?
Yeah, a little too busy this weekend. It'll be something, because now, what, there's one more for me, and then a third episode's coming out this week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe I do a double feature one of these days. Or, yeah. I'll catch up.
You'll find the time. We'll probably discuss it some more on Friday with Michael as he joins us again if he has the time. Yeah, Dylan, I'm right there with you. If you're talking about something, I will always look forward to watching. As long as it's on, it looks like it's going to be this show going forward. It's a FX Hulu joint, so it probably won't get the same type of attention that a Game of Thrones would get because it's on HBO. As far as the prestige, just that Sunday night time slot for HBO means something to people. It's something, okay, they're putting something there. That means it's really good. They're really going to like it. But for me. Particularly if we're talking about streaming stuff that you can watch at any time, throw Shogun right up there. Eric wants to talk about women's soccer, particularly the U.S. women's soccer team. They got a nice win over Colombia, bouncing back from their loss to Mexico in the group stage. They beat Colombia in the quarterfinals yesterday of the Gold Cup. What's up, Eric?
Has the U.S. women's soccer lost their luster after losing to Mexico? And why did Madam Webb fell at the box office? I think it's a Lester's Great Show.
That is Eric Wong. He did ask a relatively normal question. I think two of them. He didn't devolve in asking me about some anchor on ABC 13, which is normally his jam. We'll start with Madam Webb. Blame Sony. And plus, no one cares about Madam Webb. It's a relatively minor character in the Spider-Man universe. Obscure. No one was looking forward to it. I mean, Sydney Sweeney's in it. Dakota Johnson's in it. Those are all actors that people might like. But as far as those type of movies, it's not about the actors. It's about the character. And no one was looking to watch Madam Web. And then you hear that it's awful. That's why it did so poorly. As far as U.S. women's national team, they lost their luster when they were knocked out in the second round of the World Cup. They are no longer feared. That's been the discussion since that. The direction of the program has been kind of stunted by outside influences because some of the longstanding members of the team had, if you want to call it, political or social issues that meant something to them, and people have blamed that for the downturn. You could also point to the administration's lack of creativity when it comes to hiring. The coach they hired for this last cycle was panned repeatedly. So we can point to him and his tactics and how they play, or we can point to the players who had been successful before, and you can say the politics and the social stuff got in the way. I am one not to agree with the second point. I think you hire a bad tactician, the bad coach, you get bad results. You watch that team play in the World Cup, and it was Trinity Rodman. Yes, she is this daughter of Dennis. You're fast. Alex Morgan, you're fast. We're going to play like it's FIFA in 1998. And by FIFA, I mean the video game. Long balls. Through balls and see if you can outrun a defender, and that doesn't work anymore. The athletes are better on the international level. So that's my more detailed answer to yes, it has lost their luster, and they have to try to get it back. They hired an acclaimed coach who's coming over from Europe. I believe they're still with the interim manager now. I don't know exactly when the full-time manager will take over, but there needs to be some changes. I am one to believe tactics and how they set up the team and the roster are more important than allegedly not caring about soccer as much, because there are other concerns that some of the longstanding members were involved in. Well, those longstanding members for the most part are gone, so you can't blame that anymore. You have to blame the federation itself. We'll see. They are in the semifinals of the Gold Cup, a tournament they're expected to win because they are the U.S. We'll see how it plays out for them. Didn't think I had it that in me, did you, Eric? I'm diverse when it comes to stuff, Eric. Don't play me. Don't try to play me. That's all.
Man, all Madam Webb got was like three sentences. Yeah.
It could have been one. It's trash. I could have done that too. I could have done that, but I did give him a bit of an answer. I mean, I like Dakota Johnson and Sydney Sweeney's in her moment. She was on SNL. I didn't watch it. Once again, SNL is much like the Combine. If anything good comes out of it, I can just watch the clips. And all the clips were was look at Sydney Sweeney in a Hooters dress or a regular dress. I don't know if you guys know. For you guys who tweet that stuff, everyone's aware she is, you would say, well-endowed up top. It's a woman with big breasts. Big deal. Big deal. Why is that such a big deal?
It's two big deals.
Oh, look at Sean. Look at you, Sean. You're just like them. You're just like them. I get it. She's an attractive woman in Hollywood, and she has been one in previous roles to particular Euphoria to be naked. But is that something that's a big deal still? Naked women on TV?
Where else would you see them?
Gee, where would you see them? Where else would you see them? She's apparently, from all reports from people who are around her, a very nice, actually very smart person. So it's not just the aesthetics, but for some segments of the population, it is all about the aesthetics. And I was like, man, guys, they're just breasts. Jeez.
We got to get her in Dune 3. That's all I'm saying.
As what? Just anything. Speaking of that, there's like
find a spot.
Speaking of random, although we knew she was in it, Anna Taylor-Joy's in Dune 3.
Yeah.
If you don't know who she is, she was in that chess series on Netflix. I'm forgetting the name. She played the star of that. It was a pandemic show. I forgot what it was called.
Queen's Gambit.
Queen's Gambit. There it is. She was in that. She's been in a lot of things. She was in The Menu, which is a pretty good movie too. But she made a surprise appearance in that movie. There's a lot of wacky stuff in that movie. You know, babies who are communicating with people. Apparently I can't give you that spoiler. You have to watch the movie. But I mean, Sydney Sweeney, attractive. I get it. I understand.
She turned some heads at the Combine this weekend.
The problem is the Combine guys are such Combine guys, they didn't even see it.
More impressive, Xavier Worthy's 40 time or Sydney Sweeney's performance?
Depends on who you ask, Sean.
Okay.
Depends on who
you ask. What did Lance come in talking about?
The Combine. Actually, Sydney
Johnny Sweeney, Newton.
Actually, before the show started, the previous show started, it was more Sydney Sweeney talk than Combine stuff. Now, on the air, he has to be professional and talk about the Combine, but the conversation did drift towards Sydney Sweeney. And I'm like, sure, that's a really attractive woman. But there are a lot of really attractive women. Is she the most attractive woman?
Woman? No. Lance just came from Indianapolis, so, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't see her live either. She was on television. Like he could have seen another woman on television he found just as attractive. I'm not knocking Sydney Sweeney. I am knocking the attention being paid to a really attractive woman on television. She's one of many guys. She just happens to be comfortable showing off a particular part of her body that you guys really, really love. Congratulations to you guys. You have never seen boobs on a dress before. Amazing. All the tweets about her on SNL. Casey Musgraves was like, hey, I'm here too. I'm here. No one knew that though, Casey.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She's the Chris Bosh of this.
So I was going to, there's a joke about she's both LeBron and Wade because of.
Yeah.
And Chris Bosh, and Casey's Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh was like, hey, I had big threes in the title chase.
That offensive rebound
to Ray Allen.
To Ray Allen.
Ray Allen. Who would Ray Allen be? I don't know any other people who are on SNL.
No, to compare Ray Allen. Thompson.
Close enough.
I feel comfortable that he is on the show.
Yes. Yeah, that's the only one I could give you. Yeah. Kenan Thompson, been on SNL a long time. And Sydney Sweeney. She was on SNL on Saturday, and the world was aflame. Congratulations to you guys and all the aggregation of and the Twitter accounts and everyone getting interactions because they tweeted videos of her from that show. We got a couple more segments to go. We could get back into some Astro stuff or not. We'll see. There's a caller. We'll see what they want to talk about on the other side. Joe Espada spoke. I did want to get into what Aaron Wilson said, his article about Texas free agency. Dalton Schultz is the next guy that may get a deal, but Jacob, we see you. If anyone else wants to call in, please do. At Sean A. Mapes, at Del V2. You can tweet us that way as well. We'll be back.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea and his intrepid, most outstanding, arguably the greatest producer of all time, the one and only Sean Mapes.
I'm glad Michael's giving you credit, but it also is a shot at me because I do produce a show before this show. But I guess I could be the second greatest producer of all time. And he did say arguably. So it's up for debate.
Yeah, I think that's actually coming up next on First Take is greatest radio producer of all time. So.
Us or Gary Delabate from the Howard Stern Show. What is the Mount Rushmore of producers?
I guess he's the Jordan, I'm the LeBron, right?
Yeah, you're the one. Yeah, some people are just Sean stans, and other people won't ever give you credit because they're Delabate people. Yeah.
Hater we'll muse.
Yeah, exactly, hater muse. Jacob, I see you. I did want to get to this Dalton Schultz thing because Aaron Wilson, he wrote a longer article about Dalton Schultz. You can find that on Click to Houston. But league sources predict that Dalton Schultz will be back for the Texans. If they did use the franchise tag with Schultz, if they couldn't come to a deal, it would be $11.3 million. But that might happen if a deal isn't reached by Tuesday's deadline because there's a possibility that they may not want Dalton Schultz to hit free agency, but they are working on a deal. So that one, if a deal is going to get done before free agency for some of the Texans impending free agents, apparently Dalton Schultz is the one that could happen first. He is a guy they want back. We know Devin Singletary appears to be a guy they want back. Grenard, that'll certainly depend on how much money he's asking for. And there are options out there, some who might get tagged, others they can look into, like Shaq Barrett, who Tampa Bay is not bringing back, but he is an older player. And maybe they're fine giving an older player a two-year deal as opposed to what they might have to give to Jonathan Grenard. But that's stuff to be determined. Jacob had a question about the Rockets. What's up, Jacob?
Good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering, how would you feel if the Rockets were to pick up someone like Zach Edey? You know, he's tall, he's big, he's got a good defense. His offense is kind of one-dimensional, but I feel like he would fit in well with a teammates kind of game plan and what he's working towards. Just want to get your thoughts.
Appreciate it. Zach Edey is interesting because you look at him, the 7'4 center from Purdue. He doesn't appear to be a fit for today's NBA. Just the way the pace and space. You already have a big man in Şengün who isn't a floor stretcher. And can he play alongside, or is he just going to be your backup big? And the Rockets will have not their own pick, but they'll have Brooklyn's pick, so that'll still be a lottery pick. Are they going to spend a lottery pick on a backup center in today's NBA? Now, Zach Edey is skilled. He's a guy who provides size, certainly at 7'4". I'm not saying anything that is shocking, but I don't know where the Rockets are that a backup center who could be a lottery. Who, I don't see that's the thing. I don't know where Zach Edey's going to go. I'd have to look at mock drafts. And if they get him in the second round, cool. I wouldn't mind having your backup center who can actually score a bucket or two behind Şengün. But it's all about fits. And if he is a guy who has value ahead of the second round, I don't think they're going to draft him. Not when they have Şengün. I'll find a mock draft and see where Zach Edey might fall. But he's a really good player. But he's a guy who the NBA may not value very much because, you know, all the 7'4 guys in the NBA now can dribble and shoot. We saw the Chet Holmgren Wimby battle last week. I mean, he's not that type of athlete. Not many guys are.
That's the thing. Is the 7'4 guys now are small forwards, basically.
Yeah.
They play like small forwards and then can still block shots. Where Zach Edey, if he came or if he was getting drafted in 1994, would be the number one pick, without a doubt.
Yeah.
But also with the Rockets, like you said, it's kind of tough. You'd want to pair whoever you're picking up with someone, or you want them to pair with Alperen Sengun in the long term. And Edey, great in the post, but so is Sengun. Can't really have two guys in 2024, both calling for, one calling for the ball on the right block, one calling for the ball on the left block. It's not really how modern offense is run. If they go with a big, they probably would go with more of a like shot blocker, defensive pick and roll kind of guy.
Yeah, rim runner type.
Yeah,
yeah, a Derek Lively type. Yeah. If they're making that decision, and one draft projection has them as a mid first to second round pick, so the Rockets will be in that range. But once again, why are you drafting a backup center if you have a mid first round pick when you have a guy you really really like and is young? If like Sengun was 31, then I would get it. But he's young and not expensive yet. He will be. So Zachary's not even the top ranked center in according to these rankings. There are guys like Donovan Clingan who was a young player for UConn, who's big and athletic, can block some shots. So Zach Edey will find a place. I'm just not sure it'll be with the Rockets, considering what they might be looking for in their draft position. But he's a good player. I thought we were going to talk about the Golden State Warriors. But I wonder how that got translated. The question up there is if the Rockets could get a player from Golden State. I don't know.
Yeah. Zach Edey.
And he's from Canada, so he's not from California. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Oh, I'm thinking maybe his name sounds like someone, so he said Zach Edey.
Or maybe
it got lost in translation. Was that Jonathan Kuminga you meant to say? Moses Moody?
That would be one giant translation issue if that's what happened. Or maybe he changed his mind.
Yeah,
in the middle of the call. That's probably more likely. Yeah.
It wasn't Brandon Pajimski. That it was him or Zach Edey.
The Rockets do need a guard, I think.
Blue guy.
Certainly, despite what Jalen Green did on Saturday against the Suns. So, yeah, we'll see. Going forward, Rockets draft talk. I'm not sure they thought they would have that. They would want those questions being asked about their season in early March. They thought they had a chance to at least be a play-in team, and that seems to have gone by the wayside. But the draft will be something the Rockets focus on as they try to improve their team, but they do have the rest of the season going forward to see if they can. They probably aren't going to make the play-in, but maybe they find some answers to some of their questions going forward. One they won't find an answer to is Tari Eason. If you missed it, Ime Udoka mentioned over the weekend that Tari Eason is out for the year. That troublesome leg that had kept him out of really the entire year for the most part will keep him out the rest of the way. He'll have surgery. The timeline is 4 months, and then he should be back. So it shouldn't be something that hampers him going forward into next season. But the pain was too big of an issue for them to manage, and they're just going to shut him down. So that's unfortunate for Tari Eason. But thankfully, this issue gets cleared up, and he can come back and add some more talent to a young Rockets team still trying to build. And then the draft will be something else they look forward to as they try to strengthen a roster that had promise early but has kind of waned. But they did get a win, a nice win, and Jalen Green was the star of that one. And he forced Bradley Beal to get ejected from a game because Bradley Beal had enough of the Rockets overall, particularly Jalen Green. So he's an irritant and had a good game. Nothing but positives from Saturday night for the Rockets. We got one more segment to go here on the show. I will get more into Aaron Wilson's thoughts, or really your thoughts on free agency for the Texans, because That's the team of the moment right now. While the Astros are in spring training and they're working on things, there's a set of expectations for the Astros that won't really be determined or at least filled or fulfilled until October. That's the hope, that we're playing into late October. That's how far the season stretches now. But as far as a team that can improve themselves very quickly with the draft of free agency, it is the Texans. So we'll discuss them a little bit more before we head out for the day. Coming up next is the Gallant and George show. Paul Gallant, Joe George, and then after that, the Killer Bees with Jeremy Branham, who will regale us with what was a exciting game for the Cougs as he had a call late I mean, he made the call as far as the Jamal Shedd buzzer beater. They went 87-85 after blowing a big lead. The Cougs should maintain their number one ranking. So the play-by-play guy, the play-by-play voice of your Houston Cougars, your number one Houston Cougars, will join us a little bit later. And also that Joel Blank guy's there too. But who cares about that? He would be a little upset, I think, if he was actually listening. The Killer Bees at 3. But Gallant and George up next. We got one more segment to go here on the Del Olalea Show. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Dale Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Dale. Dell, nope, that's okay. That's on me. I went more country with it. My bad, Dell.
Apology not accepted. Well, Michael Carroll is the voice you hear on our show to bring us back. Appreciate Michael for doing that. I specifically requested him, and he agreed. So he can take some poetic license if he so chooses. Aaron Wilson, formerly of the Chronicle now, writes stuff for Click 2 Houston, still a big NFL insider. Had some scuttlebutt for the Texans and their impending free agency. I mentioned the Dalton Schultz stuff earlier. He also has heard from sources around the league that the Texans and Grenard, Jonathan Grenard, have a strong mutual interest in extending their working relationship, which is an odd phrasing for football. I don't think I've ever heard it put that way, extending their working relationship as if they're one's a consultant, the other is a business, and they've come to a deal. To keep working together. But they're hopeful and actively exploring a financial and hoping a financial compromise can be reached. I don't think Grenard's looking for a financial compromise. I think he's looking for, give me all the money. Give me as much money as I can get. I would be surprised if compromise is what a deal would be. It would be couched as a compromise if they do get a deal done. It feels like this may be Grenard's best chance at a payday, considering the numbers he put up. And if the Texans don't come correct in his eyes, he's going to go. And that's part of the paragraph as well, that the decision will come down to a potential bidding war, and we'll see if other teams make it impossible, at least in the Texans' eyes, to re-sign Grenard. So, as once again, I expect Grenard to ask for as much as he can, and if the Texans don't think he's worth it, he'll leave. Now, according to the people at the Combine, the Texans might have an interest in Chase Young as a potential replacement if Grenard does not resign. Now, Chase Young is a name that everyone's going to know, top pick. Now, a couple years ago, he was with the Commanders, and they had a midseason trade with the 49ers to send Chase Young there. He hasn't been as productive as the name would suggest. He's a good player. He's only 24 years old. And now D'Amico didn't coach him, but the 49ers saw enough of him to bring him into that system. He combined for 7.5 sacks last year, so certainly far below what Grenard had, and overall 16.5 sacks in his career. He's had injury concerns, but you may be able to get him cheaper than you would have to pay Grenard, but Grenard may simply be the better player. First-round hype and expectations aside, Chase Young simply has not produced at a level, and that's why he was one of several trades the Commanders made to help in their tanking process, and it worked out for them. They now have the second overall pick. So that's a guy who, if Grenard is no longer an option for the Texans because of money, maybe Chase Young is a guy who they can look to, and the connections are, well, he was a 49er, and D'Amico knows the 49ers. That's kind of thin, considering D'Amico didn't coach him, but at least the system would be similar. The other big name, obviously, is Devin Singletary. And D'Amico spoke very highly of him at the Combine, so the expectation for some is that he'll be back. Sheldon Rankin is another guy, and both teams are interested in both sides. I mean, I guess Sheldon Rankin's team and the Texans are interested in getting something done, but nothing is imminent. So as I mentioned before we went to break, it looks like Dalton Schultz is the guy to look to if you're looking for a deal to get done relatively quickly. It feels like everyone else, maybe outside of Singletary, are guys who are going to make it to free agency, or at least let the Texans know that they're more than willing to push it there if a deal can't get done between now and the start of it. And the franchise tag deadline is tomorrow afternoon, so we'll find out an answer if the Texans decide to franchise anyone. We'll know that answer soon, and then that is just one more step in the free agency process. So a lot to be determined for that team and for the players, and it's just an interesting place to be. And when you think about all these names, Dalton Schultz probably had the most acclaim because of what he did in Dallas, but the rest of those guys, Devin Singletary was a nice player in Buffalo, but the thought of him leaving before the, if you thought about him leaving before the season and being worried about it, you wouldn't be because he wasn't even supposed to start. Damian Pierce was, and then Damian Pierce fell down to like third string on the roster, maybe below that, became almost exclusively a kick returner. And Grenard was a guy you had questions about. Could he stay healthy? You had Will Anderson. He was supposed to be the star attraction, and he still is, but Grenard produced. So it was a nice season that led to questions that you have to answer, and you have to answer those questions with money. And if you don't, then you're going to have to replace the guys that maybe you didn't think you're going to have to worry about. Maybe you were hoping would only be 1 year stopgaps until you improve the roster with talent. Some other guys to think about if you are thinking Singletary may go or DeAndre Swift. He's a guy who's a talent who is be good in the passing game. But if you look at that Detroit Lions, well, he may be a former Eagle. He was a former Lion. He went to the Eagles, and they ran a lot of the shotgun. He teamed with Jalen Hurts, so we'll see if he's any good in the zone running scheme. That's important. We saw how it short-circuited Damian Pierce's time here. DeAndre Swift is a really good back, quick, can make people miss. The question simply will be, is he a fit with the Texans? And that's what you have to think about when it comes to all backs for the Texans.
He's also going from, you mentioned he played for the Lions, who have a very good offensive line, especially run blocking offensive line. You got the Eagles, another really good offensive line. Then you have the Texans.
Yeah. So a little different.
Not a great run blocking line. They're fine. You know, obviously, Laremy Tunsil's awesome. Tytus Howard, when he's playing in the right position, is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they weren't getting a lot of push in the middle last year. And I'm not sure if DeAndre Swift helps that, considering where he's played in the NFL and played at Georgia, too. Another good offensive line.
That's
so
true.
It's the worst offensive line he's ever
in years
ever going to play behind.
Was the last time, maybe in high school? Maybe
his high school is probably awesome.
You make a point. And if not, he was so good that it didn't matter.
Truck the 16-year-old.
Yeah, running over the kid whose dad made him play because he wanted him out of the house. Who knows? No more Valorant for you. You better go out there and try to tackle DeAndre Swift. If Valorant was even a game back thing, I'm sure it's maybe something else. But the point is, the Texas offensive line isn't great. Hopefully with Tytus Howard back at tackle, it'll be at a level where you get some help with your interior and you are what you expect. You hope Tytus Howard plays the level of that contract because he is getting paid a lot of money to play tackle. He was forced to play guard and it didn't work out. It's part of the reason some people are mocking tackles to the Texans because they think Tytus Howard is a guard where he proved, at least last year, that he shouldn't be. He should be playing tackle and then live up to your right tackle money and then maybe the Texans offensive line improves. So DeAndre Swift, I just imagine him coming here if it did come to fruition, if it's not Singletary, where he gets stopped behind the line and he's spiking the football into the ground, completely frustrated because of what he's experienced the first couple years of his career, where he rarely got touched in the backfield. He's a guy who's gonna immediately get frustrated by the fact that, hey, this isn't as easy as I remember.
Yeah, I mean the first day of training camp, he'll be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, he would hate if they signed Christian Wilkins, and Christian Wilkins on the first day of training camp blows in the backfield, and you know they don't tackle, but he thuds him, and Christian's going to talk to him even when he's on his own team. Well, I mentioned Christian Wilkins because the report came out that the Dolphins are not going to franchise tag him, which led a lot of Texans accounts to go, "You're coming home, Christian." Meanwhile, he's not from the area, but that's what people do all the time. Come on home, Christian Wilkins, with Chris Jones off the table and Sheldon Rankins, a free agent. Signing a defensive tackle who may ask for big money. Maybe something the Texans do. I'm not sure how they value tackles and what they think they should pay for them. Some tackles are worth it, like Chris Jones. Others, you think you can get good value and not spend a lot of money. But Christian Wilkins, who's going to be, I think he's 29, going to be 30 after this season, is a guy who's looking for a lot of money. The question will be, with the Texans or anyone else willing to pay an older player as far as football is concerned, that type of money. We'll see. A lot of questions left to be answered. We're done for the day. Want to thank the callers. Thank Sean. Remember, you can watch the entire lineup on ESPN Houston. You can also listen at ESPN.com or download the app. Gallant and George up next, followed by the Killer Bees. I'll talk to you tomorrow.